This is Brock and Salk.
You want to go to the Seahawks game? All right, give me one more screen.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
I would put very little stock in what Brock here has to say.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app.
Salk, the third time in 2 days, is flat out wrong.
And 710sports.com.
Well, good morning, everybody. It is Brock and Salk here on 710 ESPN Seattle. 710sports.com. Danny O'Neill. Riding shotgun today. What's up, buddy?
Not much. How are you?
I'm great. It's awesome to have you in this morning. Talk a ton of football today.
Yeah, let's do it.
I'm ready.
Got a UW game going to Utah to kick off their Pac-12 season. Seahawks.
It doesn't just kick off there. By the way, we're going to talk a lot of Seahawks today, and we'll talk a lot about this running game and Chris Carson, some of the things going on. This doesn't just kick off their Pac-12 season. Is this game their season?
No, it's not the entire. They're going to have. You got a game against Stanford at the beginning of November that looks like it's going to be a pretty big deal.
But if this game doesn't go your way, that game doesn't matter.
That's not true.
Really?
No.
You think they could
not.
Lose a second game in the Pac-12 to Utah and still kind of make this season meaningful?
Yeah, to get to the Rose Bowl. They can still get to the Rose Bowl, right? If they lose this game, they can still get to the Rose Bowl?
I don't know.
Yes.
Can they?
Yes,
okay.
Absolutely they can. The question of when you're eliminated and what a college football season means, for a college football fan, watching the arc of your team is as important as anything, and seeing that if you don't start out as well, do you have a shot at the playoff? Well, if they lose this game, they're not going to have a shot at the playoff. That doesn't mean all is lost. Mm. It doesn't mean everything is gone down the drain. There's a lot of reasons to be excited about this UW team. There's as many reasons to be concerned at this point, though. I'm excited to see how they'll play.
It is they're in a very precarious spot, I guess is really more what I mean. And it's probably just piggybacking on what you just said.
You got a quarterback that the fan base is hostile toward and who has not played particularly well. Right,
what
now.
Was you were in the stands on Saturday?
Yeah,
and because they blew them out. I mean, they blow out North Dakota as you would expect them to, but it didn't feel that way. Right?
They did not blow them out as you'd expect them to, because it was still 17 points game in the second half, and Jake Browning's getting picked off, and you heard a lot of animosity of what is Jake doing.
Maybe they hadn't read your article from last week.
There was some of that. I explained to one guy that was sitting near us, like, we're actually not going to be cursing at the college quarterback. Like, that's not something that's going to happen in this situation. Oh, he explained to me exactly what he thought of my rules of decorum, and I just said, I'm just saying we're not going to do that. Okay? We're not going
to
do that.
Were you ready to defend yourself?
Well,
did you think it might come to that?
I was going to put myself in a B-boy stance and get ready to go and say, would you hit a man with fake glasses dressed as Run DMC or LL Cool J or LL Fool J, whatever it is.
All right. So that's where they're at.
Excited to see, like, is Jake Browning going to be able to lead him in Utah? That's a tough place to play. The games have gone down to the wire each of the past 2 years, and Utah's a better team now than it was back then. Utah's a better team this season.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I know it's easy to say, but I think this is, I don't know, it's maybe still the professional sports fan in me that watches these games and says, okay, well, if the goal is to make it to the college football playoff, you did not lose that necessarily when you lost to Auburn. You fall into the number 10 range, which is still, you can come back from that and get back into the top four by the end of the year without a problem, but lose to Utah a couple weeks later, and I think that that's going to be probably out at that point.
You're worried about getting bowl eligible at that point. If you're 1-2 and your one win is over North Dakota, you're worried about whether or not it's going to even
but
be
they're
a acceptable season.
But they're not
going to
worry about being
season.
Bowl eligible, right?
No,
it's not going to go sideways like that.
It shouldn't.
Wow.
It was a 17-point span against right. North Dakota.
Well, then there is a lot on the line on Saturday. We'll talk to Brock for Washington Wednesday coming up at 8:30 this morning. In the meantime, Pete Carroll chatting with the media yesterday. And there's a lot of newsy stuff that usually comes out of a Tuesday press conference like that. But one that stands out is the future of the running back spot.
Chris really took the lead in the position after that game. And Rashad's got to, right now they're going to alternate, and we're going to keep working those guys and see how they do. But Rashad needs to get back really primed up like he was about a month ago.
All right, so Chris Carson's going to be the lead running back for now. No more of the split and carry stuff. That's an awfully quick trigger.
Well, I think that's what we've all seen for the past month, right? Is that Chris Carson's ready to do it, and Rashad Penny hasn't been out there. And when he was out there, he certainly did not look like the same back that they drafted. That was not, he did not seem decisive and did not seem aggressive in the same way. And even in the preseason game against Indianapolis, I'd say this, the thing that would be worse than drafting a running back in the first round, using your most significant asset to draft a position that there's a lot of debate about how much value there is there, would be sticking with that first round pick because he was a first round pick. Everything that you saw on Sunday would lead you to think that Chris Carson is the guy that should be getting more carries. And until that changes, that's going to be the case. That Pete was not going to deny reality. He wasn't going to tell us that, oh, everything's going along and we'll continue to do the job share, when it's pretty apparent that Chris Carson is ready for the majority of the load.
Yeah, it's interesting. Do you think this decision is more about Carson or more about Penny?
I think it's more about Penny.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know that I agree with that. I think it's more about Carson. The Penny thing, look, I like the pick, so I'm a little biased in this. I like Penny in college. I like the pick. I thought it was a good idea. I think he's going to succeed long term. And so, you know, while I wasn't wild about the way he played on Sunday, I don't know that I'm going to bury your first round running back because he didn't look good in his first debut 3 or 4 weeks after he had last played football. I'm not going to bury Penny on that. I thought it was more about Carson, who just came out and looked. He looked like a number one back almost regardless of what Penny had done. He looked like a guy that you hand the ball to. He comes straight downhill with an extra giddy up and is looking to break one all the time.
His longest run was awesome. He hurdled the dude. 24-yard gain. His second longest run was a 10-yard run on 3rd and 16 that was not a successful play.
Yeah, and other than that, he had, what, 6 other runs?
He had 5 other runs total. They averaged 2.2 yards per carry in the second half. So I'm not going to say what, based on what I saw, that, hey, Chris Carson just blew your socks off. He's the better of the two running backs, and that's in part because the other guy wasn't very good in the first game.
I don't know. I think if my running back is breaking 2 out of 7 carries or 2 out of 6 carries, whatever it is.
No, it was one.
Huh?
It was one. One out of the 10
on the other run. I mean, I know it's a draw in a different spot, but all right, dude, if he's able to break to that, I that's the guy that I want running the ball. I would say.
I would agree with you.
And you could say what you want about the 2 yard runs or the 2 yard average. We both know those aren't all created the same. And I'll always remember back to the first game that Marshawn Lynch played for the Seahawks. I want to say it was against Chicago, but I'm not sure. I just remember watching him because we'd been watching, you know, the rotting corpse of
Julius Jones,
and we've been watching for the little guy Justin
Forsett,
who wasn't really ready for the job at that point. And then all of a sudden, you get Marshawn Lynch in there. It's like, oh, that's a 1 yard run that looks better than anything they've had in the last 2 years. That's how Chris Carson looks to me. Not every 2 yard run is created equal.
I think that he looked the better of the two backs. Mm. Some of that is because Rashad Penny was disappointing. And because I think that in that decision, does it mean he's not going to be a good player in the future? No, it certainly doesn't mean that. And he had 3 weeks off because of the broken finger and he hasn't been out there. But Penny did not look like he did not look to be the more explosive of the two backs. And that's the rep, right?
He didn't come in with that little extra thing where you just see it with running backs where they get the ball and they look like they're possessed. He looked like he's a glider. So he's not always going to look like that. But geez, if you're a glider, You better glide through a hole somewhere. Did they run the ball enough to truly find out?
No, they absolutely didn't.
We're talking about a small sample size, like an incredibly small sample.
6 rushes in the first half.
Come on.
14 by running backs overall in the game. They did not run the ball enough to be able to judge what they were able to do. And that's probably, in some ways, the biggest disappointment of game one.
How did they possibly run the ball 14 times?
Well, you hear Pete. What is it?
He didn't convert
on third down.
We just didn't have a chance.
Unfortunately, they didn't have a chance
to run the ball, he said.
What went wrong in the running game?
We didn't do it enough. And that goes back to, I'll always tell you, that it goes back to, we didn't convert on third down, so then you're off the field and you don't get to use the ready list that you had. You know, we didn't get through it. We ran the ball 6 times in the first half. We had, how many plays? We had 16 plays?
16 runs, I believe. So, right?
Yeah, but I think there's like
15 in the first half.
15 plays in the first half. Yeah. You know, that's not enough to even, you can't figure it out.
So I can appreciate that, but I gotta follow up and say, why come out and throw the ball twice to start the game? Why 3rd and inches? Is it a passing play? I mean, there were some other opportunities to run the ball, right?
Yeah. Well, yes. Yes and yes. All of that.
Yes and yes.
The further we get from the game, the more I wonder how bad their offensive performance was. My initial reaction was 24 points. It's the second most that they've scored in a road opener under Carroll. Second most in 9 years in their first road game, and thinking that it's okay. You go back and watched it for the third time, you realize, well, the first touchdown, that's set up by Earl Thomas's interception. Their first 3 drives, that touchdown pass was the only quote-unquote first down that they had. You had a couple big plays at the end of the first quarter where Carson hurdles a guy and Will Disley turns into a slalom course, which those are not repeatable occurrences. Those aren't things that you feel good. I think you go into this game, and that's probably why you see a bit of a quick trigger with Carson. They need to get something they feel good about going forward.
7:10, time for Need to Know.
Need to Know, the voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know up first.
All right, let's run down the news from Pete Carroll's press conference yesterday. Made it sound like neither Doug Baldwin nor KJ Wright would be available Monday night in Chicago. Danny, I heard you right afterwards say it sounded like DJ Fluker would also be a no-go. I listened to Pete and thought of it more as a questionable and maybe he's actually got a shot to play. So in either event, we'll wait and see on DJ Fluker. The other news coming out of it, Chris Carson, according to Pete, takes the lead at running back over Rashad Penny. And I thought he looked like a number one back watching him on Sunday. The way he ran, I understand that the numbers certainly weren't credible, but the sample size is awfully small. I thought Chris Carson did enough to deserve that honor for now. And my feeling is that Penny's going to take a little bit of time, and I'm hoping by the midway point of this season, he comes on strong.
Doug Baldwin, probably not going to play. While Pete said they're going to evaluate that in a couple days, I think the idea, he's got an MCL injury, and the fact that they added Keenan Reynolds from the practice squad to the regular roster.
New Doug?
Is the guy, that's kind of the guy that's, he plays in the slot, you find a role there. Brandon Marshall suddenly became an extremely important player for this team. In fact, if you ask me right now, who's going to lead this team in receptions, and you gave me all the choices, I think I might say Brandon Marshall is the best bet in that regard.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Did you see a report, too, they were considering moving Procise to wide receiver for a little while?
I heard Pete say that, right. But that was one of those, hey, how about this? And like, Pete, we've talked about that.
Yeah, I bet you've talked about it. Mariners lose to San Diego 2-1 last night. They're 0-3 against the Padres, who are one of the worst teams in creation. Edwin Diaz gave up the game-winning run in a non-save situation. I don't understand. And I don't think it's a Scott Service thing. I think it's an Edwin Diaz thing. Like, dude, stop giving up runs in tie ball games in the ninth inning. That is a huge situation for your team. And just because you're not getting the save in that spot, I don't see why it should affect your mentality at all. Also, the Mariners yesterday, Asashi Wakuma announcing he is retiring from Major League Baseball. He's returning to Japan, where he does hope to continue playing. His run with the Mariners is incredible. He was not supposed to be very good. He was almost a throw-in, and all of a sudden he gets here and works his way from the bullpen to the starting rotation and finishes with a sub-4 ERA and a no-hitter in his major league career. He is one of the best surprises of the last 5 or 6 years for the Seattle Mariners.
He once finished third in Cy Young voting.
He was awesome that year. That was 2013.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, he was really good.
And in 2012, when he got here, he was a guy with a sore arm that they worried about pitching too much. He was a seldom-used reliever. It's pretty remarkable what had happened. He deserves a salute as he heads back to
Japan. He was always better than he seemed.
Yeah, he was always a guy Jim thought he could hit off of Hisashi Iwakuma.
You know what he probably would have done? He probably would have hit a fly ball to the outfield that somebody caught. Have you ever seen more balls against a pitcher that looked like home runs off the bat and ended up as lazy fly balls to the outfield?
Down and away. Down and away. Down and away. That was Iwakuma.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
All right, finally, Storm taking on the Washington Mystics tonight, Game 3, and it's a closeout game on the road of the WNBA Finals, a chance to give the Storm their third title in franchise history. It's a 5 o'clock tip-off on ESPN2. Yeah, I've been captured by this, and this will be part of my planned viewing for tonight. I want to see what happens. I enjoyed going to the game on Friday. I've enjoyed watching this team once I finally woke up and started watching them, and I'm excited, man. Sue Bird plays the game the way you would want any point guard to play. They've got an MVP. And I just think college basketball is great, so I'm all in. Go Storm.
We talked to Sue yesterday.
Yeah, how was she?
Sue's awesome. She's fantastic. She remembered beating Jim in horse about 15 years ago.
She's got
some
personality to her.
Oh,
huh?
She's fantastic. She talked about that. She's just
edge.
At a... I asked her why she gets her nose broken so often. She's I'm just at a really bad height. That's what happens. She deserves a huge salute. Earlier this year, there was the Seattle Times put together the list of the 10 most important Seattle athletes, and I wondered whether Sue should be on it because Lauren Jackson was the best player on those two championship teams. There's no doubt that Sue absolutely deserves to be on it. She is a franchise player. The breadth of her career, and she is one of those rare players who is stuck with the franchise through a peak, walked them through a valley, and bringing them back to a peak. Go Storm. I hope they close it out tonight. There's a part of me that wants them to do it at home in a game five, one more.
Come on.
But no, close it out tonight.
I don't know, man. I was at game one. That other team, the Mystics don't look like they can play with them. I know they were better in game two, but based on what I saw in game one, they're not on the same caliber. A totally different team. All right, there you go. Three things you need to know every single morning at 7:10. Danny is with us today, in for Brock. Hey, 8:15. So, 8:15 is when we're going to give our winner here in our Pete Carroll show sweepstakes. So here's the deal. Every week, we talk to Pete Carroll at 9:30 on Monday, and then later that day, we make a video of one of the highlights of the conversation with the coach, posted at 710sports.com/win. If you watch it, you are eligible to win tickets to an upcoming Seahawks home game. All you got to do is watch the video, but you can gain more entries by doing things like visiting our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram pages, or downloading our app, which is driven by your Puget Sound app. Accurate dealer. So listen this morning at 8:15, an hour from now, because we're going to pick a random name of all the people who've entered the contest, and that person will be the winner. They'll have 5 minutes to call in and get their tickets. Right now, the professor.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Song.
If you want to take care of him now. And the price is only going to go up.
Every morning at 7:15.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to
totally break everything down.
Plus. A wild card.
What magic trick would you like to be able to perform?
Yeah, I can maybe try to have you disappear. That could be nice.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Salk.
Good morning, John.
Good morning.
All right, let's run through some of this news from Pete. Doug and KJ both unlikely to play against Chicago. What does that mean?
It means that it's going to be harder to find the number one receiver because, I mean, Doug Baldwin has been the main guy now for so long with Russell Wilson. And so somebody has to establish as being the number one option. And so you figure that it's probably going to be 2 to 4 weeks, I would guess. I mean, maybe 2 to 3 weeks, depending on Doug. And KJ, maybe after the Chicago game, there's an outside chance that he may be there. But, you know, you can see that the weak side linebacker position was a little bit of a problem because Shaquem Griffin struggled. I mean, he did some good things, but not enough. And they had Austin Calitro out there trying to, you know, help him out a little bit, kind of mixing in. But of course, that first game still with the as many young players that they had, and they had six players, either rookies or first-year players, out there for 25 or more plays. I mean, those are the mistakes you're going to have when you're so young.
John, I thought it was interesting. There's been a lot of talk on mostly Seahawks Twitter about the altitude, the effect, and the ways Seattle could have mitigated that. Pete pointed something out yesterday, which I didn't know, which was that it's actually better to get, if you're going to play at altitude, which they were in Denver, it's better to get there the day before than it is 2 to 4 days earlier.
Yeah, and I think the study's pretty well verified, but the problem is like, oh, how do you still overcome it? And that was a problem, and it was clearly a problem on the sidelines. I mean, I didn't see it directly, but I know that some of the sideline reporting had it that, you know, a couple of the guys were throwing up, and you can see that I would look over and I'd see a guy that, like, I saw Rashad Penny in the third quarter, you know, his hands were on his knees trying to get through it. I mean, it's a tough thing, and you have to kind of go in there, and when it's 84 degrees and you're a mile high up, it's going to affect every team. But again, you know, how do you try to conquer that? Probably that's why it's such a home field advantage in Denver with the Broncos, because they are at a mile high, and when you have a hot weather day like that, it's going to affect the team.
The other thing is the kicker. McManus was awesome from beyond 50 for the Broncos. Sebastian Janikowski missed back-to-back attempts, but it doesn't sound like Seattle's looking at a different kicker.
No, I think they have confidence in him, but again, I think this has to be a concern. I mean, I know that we can overdo and think about the two missed extra points in the Oakland game, but he still missed two extra points, and that really the missed field goal, particularly after the penalty that put now the ball at the 46, you know, making it a 46-yard attempt, I mean, that changed the whole outcome of the fourth quarter, because if it was going to be a tie or Seattle was going to have a little bit of a bigger lead, then you know, it would have changed the last three possessions for Russell Wilson, because, you know, Russell ended up having to scramble around. Well, he wouldn't have to scramble around if the game was tied or they had the lead. So those are important kicks. And again, you saw it last year. They lost three games because Blair Walsh missed three key kicks. Mm-hmm. But they didn't lose the game because of Janikowski, but it did affect the way things went in the fourth quarter.
I mean, they lost by 3 points and he missed a kick. So it's certainly right there. I mean, that's about the same as what happened in the Atlantic game, which would have tied it. I mean, yeah, I think there's certainly an argument to be made. Martavis Bryant, wide receiver, who's had a lot of success in this league but also has his issues, signed yesterday with the Raiders, re-signed with them. Is that a name the Seahawks would have or should have considered?
Absolutely not. No, I don't think so, because you still don't know if he's going to get suspended or not. And one of the big complaints and the reason why he was cut is he just simply did not pick up the offense. I mean, John Gruden was almost laughing at different times during training camp. Like, there was one day where Martavis Bryant ended up having a good day in practice and picked up things, and John Gruden kind of joked about it. He's like, hey, it looks like he had a day where he did some things and he figured some things out. But for the most part, I mean, do you really want to sign a talent that can come in here and not know your offense? I'd say no.
John, what's the reaction been to the Khalil Mack trade around the league? Who do people think got the better end of that deal?
Chicago, big time. I mean, I think everybody is baffled about why the Raiders would do this, and it's a simple matter. Is that I think the biggest criticism is this is why you don't have coaches trying to make the football decisions and personnel without the assistance of the general manager. Because, it's like the philosophy of trading a player that talented, look what it did. I mean, they gave up 33 points on defense and were completely flat in the second half, and now they don't have enough playmakers on defense. They had one of the best playmakers, and to get two draft choices that may work out or may not work out was a bad move by the Raiders. And Raider fans, rightfully so, are furious.
I hope that the Raiders draft two Hall of Famers with those two first-round picks.
You do?
I do. I just think it would be the funniest end to this whole thing is if they drafted two future Hall of Famers, and in the first 4 years of their deal, the Raiders win the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. I'm now going to be a Raiders fan for the next few years.
Why?
Just because, I mean, maybe it's just the contrarian in me, but whatever, man. They didn't want to pay one guy that much money, and I understand that.
Yeah,
they wanted to build for the future of their football team, and it may hurt them short term, but it might really help them long term.
Yeah, it's also possible.
Everybody likes it, but guess what?
So this is the opposite.
Mike Salk don't.
Everybody hates it.
Contrarian.
Everybody hates it, but in this case, I don't mind it. I think the Raiders may end up doing okay in this. And that's not to say Chicago won't, but Chicago's a bad franchise, and they'll probably screw this up, and they don't have a quarterback.
They might have a quarterback. Trubisky didn't look bad. What did you think of the Bears in game one?
First half, I thought he did very well. I think you can almost see a little touch with Matt Nagy looking like Sean McVay out there trying to work Jared Goff. And I think you can see that with the running plays, with the some of the passes and that. I mean, I thought that it really looked encouraging, better than I thought. But then it was completely flat in the second half. And his closing ability did not look good. But I think he showed a little bit more than he showed last year.
He was bound. He looked like Brooks Bollinger at the end of that game. That's pretty much what I saw. Let's do a little wild card.
Time now for the wild card. What
wild card? Mr. Professor Clayton?
Yes.
What would be the best and worst parts about having a pet capuchin monkey?
Well, I mean, I guess the worst part is it's going to make a mess around the house. I mean, that's not going to be good. Secondly, you figure, and I don't even know what a capuchin monkey is, but you figure if it's going to be a monkey, it's going to be climbing on things. And if you're having it in the house, it's going to bring things down. I mean, it could bring lights down. It could bring, different parts of, you can
art.
Rip up the walls. And
you have art on your
like
walls,
that.
John?
What's that?
You have art on your walls?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want that. Are you like an art collector? Or
No. I mean, my wife's father, Pat, is a colonel in the Army, and he has just absolutely gorgeous portraits that are all through this house. And if they would come down, Pat's not going to like it at all.
No, that would be a significant problem with having a monkey. Plus, I feel like they'd tear up your papers.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, what happens?
I think they'd hide stuff.
What happens if
I think
open
all of a sudden
computer?
you'd be like, where is that digital storage memory stick that it was supposed to be? And the monkey's just sitting there, little capuchin monkey.
Chewing on it.
I don't know.
Chewing on my
I don't
memory
know.
Stick.
Yeah. I can't find my socks.
John, we'll see you later.
And
John,
what if he gets in my database?
No, he can't have that. He'd just be typing away. All right, 10 o'clock, John's show. He's with us, of course, every day, including tomorrow, right at 10, right at 7:15. He'll be on with Danny, Dave, and Moore every day, but not today because there's a baseball game, but at 4 o'clock with those guys. All right.
Got to salvage one against the hated Padres, the natural rival, the Eddie Vedder Cup.
How do you get four games against the Padres and just completely give away three of them? Your interleague schedule in natural rivalry gives you four games against one of the worst teams in creation. And you just hand away three of them?
I'm not proud of this, but there's part of me that's just like, fine, do it. Yeah, see if I care.
Right.
See if it bothers me now.
Just lose
Give it
them,
away. Right? I don't even care. I'm not even going to get mad about this. The only reason I'm mad is because Edwin Diaz pitched poorly in a non-save situation. I'm going to have to listen to Jim Moore talk about it.
Are you familiar with Which Is Better? Have you been here for Which Is Better
I have
yet?
Not.
Oh,
no.
I'm excited. I think you're going to like Which Is Better. It's really easy. It's quite frankly the easiest game on radio. And it's next on Brock and Salk.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
this is Brock and Salk.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com.
All right, it's Brock and Salk, 710 ESPN Seattle. Danny O'Neill in hanging out for Brock. And I can't believe you've never been here to play our fun game.
Which is better?
Which is better? It's the easiest game.
How easy is it?
I'm going to give you a couple choices. I will admit, generally it's two choices. There are a couple today with three choices. So it makes the game more complicated.
Okay.
All you got to choose is which is better. And the reasoning can be whatever you want. It doesn't have to be real. Like it can just be aesthetic. It doesn't matter. Whatever you think is better.
Just pick whichever is better.
Whichever is better. We're going to work on it together. Okay, you ready? Which is better? Down two with the ball at your own 20 and a minute left to play, or up two, but the other team has the ball at their 20 and a minute left to play?
Who's my quarterback? Give me the ball.
You want the ball.
Give me the ball. Rooting for someone else to screw up is one of the toughest things. Oh, you have no timeouts?
No timeouts.
How much time left?
1 minute. But you only need a field goal.
1 minute at the 20.
1 minute at the 20, you need a field goal to win. Not even tie.
Yeah, give me the ball. Give me the ball. Give me the ball. There's too much that I remember. 2012 playoff game in Atlanta for the Seahawks. Give me the ball. Give me the ball.
I'm with you. I don't want to see my defense in that spot. I just think quarterback play is generally so good that regardless of who my quarterback is, unless he's real bad, if I only need a field goal, yeah, give me the quarterback.
There's also something of the payoff for the victory.
Yes.
When you have the ball and you win it in that situation, yeah. It's like leaving and feeling that like you're in a music video and the world is, you're on top of the world.
Yeah. I'm with you. All right. Let's see. Which is better? Speed or power?
Speed.
Really?
I like speed.
Just overall, you prefer speed to power?
Aesthetics, like I like the fast baseball player. I liked Vince Coleman.
Oh.
I like D. Gordon. I love DeSean Jackson. Speed. John Ross, one of my favorite Huskies to root for.
I'm going power, man. I disagree with you on this one. I like power. Give me Jim Thome. Give me Manny Ramirez. Give me Nelson Cruz. Give me Cam Chancellor.
I thought you were going to drop some hockey players in here, too.
Oh, geez. Give me Cam Neely.
Speed there.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I mean, I like speed in hockey's fine, but I like power in hockey, too. Yeah, give me power over speed. Give me a big power forward.
Did you guys see the move Aaron Donald pulled the other night? This would be in your argument for power. He did what they're calling the bull pull,
yeah.
Where he bull rushed him and then grabbed the guy and threw him behind him. It was absolutely
like a
terrifying.
Rag doll.
Disrespectful.
Yes. Yeah, it was. I'm going to shove you.
Disrespect has been noted.
And then I'm going to hold on to you and throw you behind me as I run into your quarterback.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll take power over speed.
Yeah, give me the speed.
All right. Which is better, Danny? 90s rap, 2000s rap, or 2010s rap?
Oh, there's no doubt. It's hip hop has gotten worse. It goes 90s rap is by far better.
Do I have to throw 80s in here? I don't think I do. Do I?
80s has got some stuff, but 90s is the golden age. 90s, people say it's the late 80s, it's the 90s.
Yeah, I tend to think that it's like the late 90s more than the early 90s, although I know there's a lot of classics from the early 90s. I think there's an argument to be made from like 2000 to 2005, though. It may be the period that kind of ended rap, but I still like it.
Puffy?
No, that's a little earlier.
Yeah, that's late
90s. You're talking like Lil Jon and the East Side Boys?
Chingy?
Yeah.
I think that is a little later.
Nelly?
I think it's sort of like a lot of Snoop in there, a little bit of Nelly, some DMX.
Twins, yeah.
See, Snoop, you get Snoop's first solo album would have been 94.
You get 2001.
Yeah, see, Exhibit's hot trash.
Don't you say Exhibit's trash. X to the Z?
Yeah,
X
no.
to the
no.
Z.
I'm out. Yeah. We're done. This conversation's over.
The only worthwhile 2000 rapper was Mos Def. Maybe a little Talib.
Tremendous Mali. One.
Yeah, I love Mos Def.
Like both of those guys. All right. Which is better, Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers?
Rodgers.
He's won championship. Brady's got how many?
Brady's got the best coach in the league.
I know.
Rodgers the better quarterback. Did you see what he did with one leg the other night?
Yeah, he tried to throw a pick and then threw a 15-yard pass that the guy ran 80 yards on.
He won through from the opposite hash to Allison
good.
Geronimo. Or is it Geronimo Allison? I always get his. He's got two last names. It shouldn't be that way. That throw was one of the most amazing throws I've ever seen.
Yeah, he's really good. On the other hand, Tom Brady's Tom Brady. I'm still going to go with Tom Brady. He's the greatest of all time. He might not be a better quarterback. He might not be a better passer or whatever, but he's just Tom Brady.
I'm over Brady, man.
Oh, whoa. Easy.
Yeah.
Aren't you kind of over Aaron Rodgers always being a little injured and coming back?
I am over
and
that.
And he's limping around, and his calf hurts, and his knee hurts.
It's a lot of Ben Roethlisberger. His shoulder hurts.
There's enough people there's enough people that are mad at him like that.
Yeah.
That I kind of like him.
Oh,
now.
Come on. He's
no, Danny.
Plus, he was nice to Jim.
He was nice to Jim when he was the only one.
I'm cold. My arm hurts. Oh, my foot hurts.
All right, Danny, which is better? Khalil Mack, Von Miller, or Aaron Donald? Three-way choice this time. Who's better?
Give me Aaron Donald. I think Aaron Donald's the most dominant player in football.
I hate to agree with you, but I do.
And then I think it's Von Miller, then it's Khalil
Mack. Doesn't have to be which is better. Who'd you rather watch? I mean, like, you can take this in a lot of different directions.
I'd rather watch...
You'd still rather watch Aaron Donald?
Did you hear the thing where I talked about the bull pull? Were you listening to that?
Yeah.
Where he, like, took the lineman and shoved him backwards.
I know.
Then still holding on to him.
Did you see... Did you not see Von Miller strip the ball away from Chris Carson like he
going
was taking
against,
a handoff?
Like, Jermaine Ifedi, though.
Yeah.
Like, I mean...
Oh, but come on. What he did was still crazy.
Yeah, it was insane.
It was essentially...
But didn't Mack do, like, a similar thing?
He took a handoff from Chris Carson.
Yeah.
Mack did, like, a
That's true.
It was a three-cone drill for Von Miller.
But do you like a guy coming up the middle instead of off the edge?
Yeah.
You like the aesthetics of that?
Yeah.
All right.
It's pretty awesome when you watch someone.
Interesting, considering you go speed over power.
I know, but you watch him on the end. Because going around the outside, you're just like, oh, he's so quick. Like Derek Thomas. Derek Thomas is one of the best pass rushers ever, but he kind of just had one move.
Just super fast.
Just really fast around the edge.
Yeah. That's why LT's the greatest of all time. Just watch him do everything. Perfect combination of speed and power.
Yeah.
There's a play in that in one of the like long LT NFL films things. It's one where he's mic'd up the whole time talking about, we go out there like a bunch of crazed dogs, baby. Have some fun. Like that's There's a play in there where he's playing right, not defensive end, but right outside linebacker. And there's a running play to him. And they send at him first the tight end, and he like uses his right arm and moves him out of the way. Then they send the fullback, and he takes his left arm and moves him out of the way. And then he takes both arms and just like crumples the running back. It's awesome. I love LT. All right, Danny, which is better, Fox or CBS?
Fox.
You like watching a game on Fox more than CBS?
I like Fox's, and this is weird. I like Fox's halftime and pregame shows. I like Jimmy Johnson, Michael Strahan, and Howie Long, which is weird because out of those three guys, Long is the only one that I like individually.
But you like them together.
And I think Kurt Menefee does a good job kind of hurting everybody. I like Fox.
I don't watch any of the pre and middle.
Oh, really?
I don't watch any of that stuff. I never do. I just like I tune in at 10 o'clock and then like I walk away during halftime. I almost never watch those things.
Oh, I like
it. You do.
It
like
gets
you're
me
into
set for
who,
the
like
day.
Michael Strahan and
yeah,
all that.
I want to hear what they have to say.
I don't care at all. They're talking in like 5 second sound bites.
Just AFC football is the worst.
It is now.
It's Chargers,
what about the presentation?
Bills on a Sunday.
What about the presentation,
October.
The music, the whole thing?
Fox.
Still going with Fox.
Do you know what it is?
That's amazing considering.
Really, Dolphins on CBS. Woo!
I do not like Boomer Esiason. Like, Boomer Esiason, like, soils a lot of different things for me, and he's part of the CBS, and now Phil Simms is there, and I've always thought that those are kind of two weird clones of each other. Like, Boomer's the slightly cooler.
I love Phil. Don't talk. Don't you talk
I
about
like
Phil.
I like Phil okay, Phil's but you put him next to Boomer, and it's insufferable.
Yeah, they're...
Like, the two of them together are awful. Like, he makes Boomer worse, and Boomer's already pretty bad.
I've kind of come to, I don't know. I'm torn on this one, but is it me or does CBS's lighting better? The lighting
possible.
On CBS always seems to be brighter than the games on Fox.
Yeah, the other thing is Fox has the stupid robot.
I know. Well, see, there's a lot of things you got to take robot. Into consideration
yeah,
here.
You got
Cletus
you gotta
the robot?
That.
Yeah, Danny's out on Cletus.
I do not like Cletus. I'll say this. Boomer Esiason is like the starting quarterback, super cool kid at the worst high school in the entire league. So his team is terrible, but he's a really big deal. Like, you talk about a big fish in a small pond, that's Boomer Esiason.
All right, there you go. That's which is better. Way to go, Salk. You made a game that no matter how it goes down, you get to criticize and point out contradictions, making Danny feel so stupid that you can feel smart.
Here's the thing about 90s hip-hop.
I just disagree.
This is why 90s hip-hop is significantly better. If you draft 90s hip-hop, you get the G-Funk era of Dr. Dre.
Right.
You get Ice Cube's solo career, which includes his Opus Death Certificate.
Yeah.
You also get all of the Wu-Tang Clan.
Right, that's true.
The whole Wu-Tang Clan plus Notorious B.I.G., and that's when Tupac came and released All Eyes on Me.
It's probably a winner. Yeah. All right, you're probably right.
Yeah.
It's a landslide.
It's a landslide winner. I still prefer the other thing, but that's fine.
Contrarian.
Like, no, it's just what I like. We can't we like different music?
Sure.
All right. You're right.
You're free to be wrong.
Thank you. And I know I am in this case. Some of the others, though. I mean, Power Over Speed. That was
everybody likes it, but guess what? Mike's all gone. Contrarian.
I'm about done with you today, Lydia. I'm about done with the amount of contrarian drops we're getting today, okay?
I thought that was Howdy that's playing that. That's Lydia?
That's Lydia who's cruel, right? Everyone assumes it's Howdy because it's mean, but no, it's Lydia who's just...
I can't play a single piece of sound on this show.
Yeah, it's,
no?
It's,
nope.
You've been neutered.
All right, Danny's in for Coors Light's Blue 42, and we got a bunch of Seahawks questions for him that you're not going to want to miss next here on Brock and Salk.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
All right, time for three good football questions today with Danny O'Neill, who's in for Brock. Don't worry, you'll hear from Brock for all of you Brock people out there.
Washington Wednesday,
8:30, as it always is on Wednesdays. Brock will tell us what he is hearing from all of his buddies across the national landscape. He'll call in for that conversation. That's in 45 minutes. Danny, three good football questions for you starts here this morning. After seeing the Seahawks and then seeing the rest of the NFC, do you think their playoff chances are better or worse than you did a week ago?
Better. Watching everyone, and I think that even the teams that I would consider favorites in the conference, the Vikings, watched all of the Vikings-Niners games, the Packers, other teams that you would consider favorites, I feel better about where Seattle is, and I also feel better given the way Seattle played. They went to a place no one wins in September. Denver has one of the biggest home field advantages in that month. The Seahawks had a lot of things go wrong. And they had a turnover edge, but they had a touchdown nullified by a penalty. They had two different kicks that they missed, two cracks at a field goal that they missed. They also had a questionable touchdown awarded to the opponent, and they're still in position to win that game.
In a weird fumble at the end of the game that just doesn't happen.
I feel better about Seattle's chances of making the playoffs after week one.
All right, question number two. Le'Veon Bell continues to stay away from Steelers camp. It is not a holdout. That's, I guess, important to point out here. He's just refusing to sign his franchise tender. What do you make of this whole situation?
I'm now supportive of Le'Veon Bell. And not in that, hey, I think what he's doing is the right move for his career. He's making a value judgment about what game checks are worth to him, given the fact that he hasn't gotten the long-term deal he wanted. He hasn't signed anything, and maybe it's because all his teammates piped up and he should play for this. He's basically been given no choice but to play for the one-year contract tender that the Steelers have offered him, $14 million, which is a lot of money. But if he decides, I don't want to work for that, I don't want to play for that money, he's not obligated to sign it. There's no requirement to sign it. And he's probably going to get a gigantic contract this offseason still, in spite of this. He doesn't owe it to anybody to take what the Steelers have offered him.
All right, question number three. We had an opportunity to watch the Seahawks against Von Miller on Sunday. There were some mixed results. Von Miller certainly made a play or two.
Russell takes a shotgun snap. Here comes the pressure. He's got to scramble out. Look out. He's going to go down again. All the way back inside the 30. And once again, it's that guy, Von Miller.
Yeah, he's really good. What can you learn from watching them against Von Miller that might help them against Khalil Mack?
They should feel better about Jermaine Effetti. I thought Effetti acquitted himself fairly well. He got beat sometimes by Von Miller. There's no shame in that. I think they should feel better about their ability to protect it. And they should feel encouraged about, hey, we should feel confident about being able to run our offense. Russell needs to have some plays where he gets the ball out quicker. I still continue to think that, hey, get some opportunities here and do not do the backwards spin move. Don't do the 180-degree pocket escape. If there's one lesson from that first game, it's that I think Russell needs to ditch that part of it. It looks like pass rushers are adjusting their pursuit angle, because for years, that's essentially what he's done, is he's had this sixth sense, or when he sees a pass rusher, he pulls a 180-degree spin. but he's turning blind into the defense. And if the rusher adjusts his angle, he's toast, which is kind of what's happened.
All right, that's today's Coors Light's Blue 42. I'm with you on that last one on first and second down. I don't really think I'm going to have a problem with him getting sacked on third down this year. In my view, with Michael Dixon being as good as he is, legitimately, the difference between throwing an incomplete pass and stepping on that play and attempting to make a big play and getting caught for a 7 or 8 yard loss just isn't that big a deal.
Now, I agree with that logic. Here's what I would push back, though. Why can't he start to get rid of the ball before the pressure gets there? Instead of trying to extend plays, why can't, like, let's focus on that, because something good can happen in that time too.
Brock thinks the answer is trust.
Is that he doesn't trust his receivers?
Especially with no Doug Baldwin in there, and he's learning to trust the rest of these guys. He seems to have some trust in Disley and in Brandon Marshall, but then maybe in Jerron Brown and maybe in Keenan Reynolds and some of the other guys that are going to, David Moore, the trust factor just isn't there yet.
Yeah, there's part of me that really thinks, though, that Russell's next step is not becoming more elusive or extending more plays. If anything, he's got to start focusing and recognizing that he's going to become less elusive.
Yeah.
Let's be more decisive. Get rid of the ball before
but
the pressure gets there.
But part of his view is keep it close until the fourth quarter. And when he does need to do that is in the fourth quarter. Because, look, that's a one-score game in the fourth quarter, and unfortunately he doesn't go down the field the way you need him to with a minute left. I think the plays where I would agree with you were near the end, where he could have hit the slant, and there like a few others in the fourth quarter where I'd probably agree early in the game. I think he's just not going to throw it unless he really trusts that it's there.
Here's the other thing, though, is early in the game, that's when you're conceding third down conversions. That's when you're having where they're running seven plays in the first quarter and Pete's saying we didn't get a chance to run the ball because we can't convert anything. Come on, let's have some predictable offense. Let's run offense. just run the play as it's designed.
Hey, one note on your very interesting view there on Le'Veon Bell, and it's just worth pointing out. The difference between his situation and a lot of the others is that he has not signed a contract that he's not living up to.
Yeah.
This is a franchise tender that the team is sticking on him, and he's saying, I don't want to play for that.
He's essentially been offered a bunch of contracts. He said no, and they said, fine, here's the franchise tag. He's like, I don't want to sign that. They keep offering him contracts. He says, no, I don't want to sign it. This is essentially, well, you're going to have to sign this. Well, I don't have to sign it. I'm not required to work for you.
Yeah, and I haven't signed a contract that says that I will. I'm not going to sign it. I'm not interested. I'll go play somewhere else next year when I'm ready. I think you make a pretty convincing point there. I also understand why his teammates are mad, because they don't care about the intricate details. They want Le'Veon Bell there, and they want him to come play.
Well, then go yell at the owner and tell them to sign
him. But the owner signs their checks. That doesn't pay. You can't yell at the owners too much.
It's kind of being a toady. You're siding with the man.
Well, you know.
You're siding with the man.
All right, coming up next, Danny, you asked three Seahawks questions in a column on 710sports.com. I want to debate all three of them next. I'm Brock and Salk.